following is an Audio Renaissance presentation.
Hello, I'm Bill Hartley, president of Audio Renaissance. I'm very pleased to introduce you to this special two-cassette edition of Napoleon Hill's classic, Think and Grow Rich, co-produced by Audio Renaissance Tapes and Cassette Productions Unlimited. This unique presentation of Think and Grow Rich combines excerpts from the book read by Joe Slattery with personal anecdotes told by the author himself, Napoleon Hill. Because there's so much valuable information contained in every minute of this two-hour program, we've included a self-help success manual designed for you to use along with the audio cassettes. We hope that it'll assist you in organizing your study of Napoleon Hill's philosophy of success, and that it'll become a record of your personal growth as you think and grow rich. Just before we begin, I'd like to give you the following information from the publisher's preface. Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, published by Fawcett Crest, New York, copyright 1937 by Napoleon Hill. Revised edition, copyright 1960 by Combined Registry Company. Copyright under International and Pan-American Copyright Conventions. All rights reserved and transferred, January 1963, to Napoleon Hill Foundation, Charleston, South Carolina. And now, here's Joe Slattery with Napoleon Hill and our special presentation of Think and Grow Rich.
Think and Grow Rich is one of the most influential books of all time in pointing the way to personal achievement, to financial independence, and to riches of the spirit beyond measurement in money. There has never been another book like it, nor ever can be. It was inspired by Andrew Carnegie, who disclosed his formula of personal achievement to the author, Napoleon Hill, many years ago. Carnegie not only made himself a multimillionaire, but he made millionaires of more than a score of men to whom he taught his secret. Another 500 wealthy men revealed the source of their riches to Napoleon Hill, who has spent a lifetime of research in bringing their message to people in all walks of life who are willing to give their thoughts, ideas, and organized plans in return for riches. The riches within your grasp cannot always be measured in money. There are great riches in lasting friendships, harmonious family relationships, sympathy and understanding between business associates, an inner harmony which brings peace of mind measurable only in spiritual values. The philosophy of Think and Grow Rich will prepare you to attract and enjoy these higher estates which always have been and always will be denied to all except those who are ready for them.
Everyone desires to be rich, but not everyone knows what constitutes enduring riches. And most people believe riches to consist only in material things that money can buy. Now, here is a list of the 12 things which constitute real riches. Number one, a positive mental attitude. Observe that it heads the list. And second, sound physical health. And third, harmony in human relations. And fourth, freedom from fear. And fifth, the hope of future achievement. And sixth, the capacity for applied faith. And seven, willingness to share one's blessings with others. 8, to be engaged in a labor of love. 9, an open mind on all subjects toward all people. 10, complete self-discipline. 11, wisdom with which to understand people. And 12, financial security. Observe, if you will, with great benefit, the fact that money comes at the end of the list of the 12 things that make men rich.
Be prepared when you begin to put the philosophy of Think and Grow Rich into action for a changed life which will not only ease the trials and stresses of living, but will also prepare you for the accumulation of material riches in abundance. In every chapter of this book, mention has been made of the money-making secret which has made fortunes for hundreds of exceedingly wealthy men whom I have carefully analyzed over a long period of years. If you are ready to put it to use, you will recognize this secret at least once in every chapter. I wish I might feel privileged to tell you how you will know if you are ready, but that would deprive you of much of the benefit you will receive when you make the discovery in your own way. As a final word of preparation, before you begin the first chapter, may I offer one brief suggestion which may provide a clue by which the Carnegie secret may be recognized. It is this: all achievement, all earned riches, have their beginning in an idea. If you are ready for the secret, you already possess one half of it. Therefore, you will readily recognize the other half the moment it reaches your mind. When you begin to think and grow rich, you will observe that riches begin with a state of mind, with definiteness of purpose, with little or no hard work. You and every other person ought to be interested in knowing how to acquire that state of mind which will attract riches. I spent 25 years in research because I too wanted to know how wealthy men became that way.
My brother and I had matriculated at Georgetown University Law School intending to become lawyers. We didn't have any money, but I did have ability to write, and I promised that I would write stories about successful men, sell them to a magazine, and pay our way through. And my first assignment, fortunately, was with Andrew Carnegie in Pittsburgh. He gave me 3 hours. And when the 3 hours were over, he said, "Now, this interview is just beginning. Come on out the house, stay all night, and after dinner we'll pick up the interview again." He kept me there 3 days and nights. And believe you me, I was more than flattered. I wondered what it was all about. He kept talking to me about the need for a new philosophy. He said, "We've had many philosophies, the days of Socrates and Plato, on down to the days of William James and Emerson, but most of them dealt with the moral laws of life. What we need is an economic philosophy for the man of the streets that will enable him to make use of the know-how gained by men like myself over a lifetime of experience." Well, it sounded very nice to me, except for one thing. I didn't know exactly what that word philosophy meant. And finally, at the end of the third day, he said, "Now look here, I have been talking to you for 3 days about the need for a new philosophy, and I'm going to ask you a question about it. If I commission you to become the author of this philosophy, give you letters of introduction to men whose experiences you will need in collaboration with yourself, are you willing to put in 20 years of research, because that's how long it will take, paying your own way as you go along without any subsidy from me, yes or no?" Now, ladies and gentlemen, there have been many times in my life when I have faced difficult problems and difficult decisions. I don't think I ever faced one more embarrassing than that. Because when Mr. Carnegie put that proposition to me, my hand was down in my pocket, and I was fiddling with the money that I had there, just about enough to get back to Washington. And if I'd had to stay at a hotel instead of Mr. Carnegie's house, I wouldn't have had that much. I didn't even know the meaning of the word philosophy. And here, the richest man in the world wanted me to go to work for him for 20 years without pay. Wasn't that a situation for you? I started to tell Mr. Carnegie, I started to do just exactly what you or the most of us people would have done under the same circumstances. And what do you think that was? What would you have done if you would have faced that sort of proposition, going to work for 20 years without any pay for the richest man in the world? Well, yes, that's what I was about to do. But something inside of me wouldn't let me open my mouth until I got a hunch that if Mr. Carnegie had kept me there for 3 days, it must have been for a purpose. That he must have seen something in me that I didn't know was there. Also, that a man with Mr. Carnegie's reputation for picking men certainly didn't pick me to do a job like that unless he knew I had the ability to do it. And whatever this something was, this silent, invisible person that was standing, looking over my shoulder and whispering into my ear, said, "Go ahead and tell him yes." I said, "Mr. Carnegie, I not only will accept the commission, sir, but you may depend upon it that I will complete it." He said, "I like the way you ended that sentence up, and I think you'll do it. You have the job." The only contribution Mr. Carnegie ever made to me outside of introducing me where I need to be introduced was to pay my expenses in the early part of my relationship with him. The first man he sent me to see was Henry Ford. Now, he said, "I want you to go up to Detroit, become acquainted with Henry Ford, observe him carefully, because one of these days he's going to dominate the motor industry." And it's going to be second only to the steel industry. This was in 1908, the late fall of 1908, ladies and gentlemen. I went up there and spent 2 days trying to find Ford, and when I did find him, he came out of the rear of a shop where he'd been doing some experimenting with an old pair of overalls on, a plug hat or a derby hat that had been bashed in the crown, the grease all over his hands. I remember he got my shirt sleeves dirty when I shook hands with him. And I sat down for a half hour with Mr. Ford, and about all of his conversation consisted of yes and no, mostly no. And I wondered how a man like Mr. Carnegie could have made a mistake like that. Imagine if Mr. Ford would ever be a leader in anything. Well, I won't tell you the rest of it. That's enough.
Desire. The starting point of all achievement. The first step toward riches. A long while ago, a great warrior faced a situation which made it necessary for him to make a decision which ensured his success on the battlefield. He was about to send his armies against a powerful foe, whose men outnumbered his own. He loaded his soldiers into boats, sailed to the enemy's country, unloaded soldiers and equipment, then gave the order to burn the ships that had carried them. Addressing his men before the first battle, he said, "You see the boats going up in smoke. That means that we cannot leave these shores alive unless we win. We now have no choice. We win or we perish." They won. Every person who wins in an undertaking must be willing to burn his ships and cut all sources of retreat. Only by so doing can one be sure of maintaining that state of mind known as a burning desire to win, essential to success. Every human being who reaches the age of understanding of the purpose of money wishes for it. Wishing will not bring riches, but desiring riches with a state of mind that becomes an obsession, then planning definite ways and means to acquire riches, and backing those plans with persistence which does not recognize failure, will bring riches. 6 ways to turn desires into gold. The method by which desire for riches can be transmuted into its financial equivalent consists of 6 definite practical steps. That is, first, fix in your mind the exact amount of money you desire. It is not sufficient merely to say, "I want plenty of money." Be definite as to the amount. There is a psychological reason for definiteness, which will be described in a subsequent chapter. Second, determine exactly what you intend to give in return for the money you desire. There is no such reality as something for nothing. Third, establish a definite date when you intend to possess the money you desire. Fourth, create a definite plan for carrying out your desire and begin at once, whether you are ready or not, to put this plan into action. Fifth, write out a clear, concise statement of the amount of money you intend to acquire, name the time limit for its acquisition, state what you intend to give in return for the money, and describe clearly the plan through which you intend to accumulate it. Sixth, read your written statement aloud twice daily, once just before retiring at night and once after arising in the morning. As you read, see and feel and believe yourself already in possession of the money. It is important that you follow the instructions described in these 6 steps. It is especially important that you observe and follow the instructions in the 6th paragraph. You may complain that it's impossible for you to see yourself in possession of money before you actually have it. Here is where a burning desire will come to your aid. If you truly desire money so keenly that your desire is an obsession, you will have no difficulty in convincing yourself that you will acquire it. The object is to want money and to become so determined to have it that you convince yourself you will have it. Can you imagine yourself a millionaire? To the uninitiated, who has not been schooled in the working principles of the human mind, these instructions may appear impractical. It may be helpful to all who fail to recognize the soundness of the 6 steps to know that the information they convey was received from Andrew Carnegie, who began as an ordinary laborer in the steel mills, but managed, despite his humble beginning, to make these principles yield him a fortune of considerably more than $100 million. It may be a further help to know that the six steps here recommended were carefully scrutinized by the late Thomas A. Edison, who placed his stamp of approval upon them as being not only the steps essential for the accumulation of money, but for the attainment of any goal.